It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show. My name is Derek Brown. I'm your host. But look, we got to get into this week's episode. It's going to be a blast, man. We are going to run through our guys of this NFL draft class. And I'm going to start this off real fast. Yes, Thor is here. He's in the building. Yeah, that's great. That's grand and usual. But I got to lead this off. We have got a massive guest. The first guest of the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show, we have John Middlecoff from the Volume Network. John, what's going on, man? And I'm going to throw this at you real fast because, look, the people, we talked about you and teased this entire episode last week on the show. And so people, look, go back to that episode. You could hear some of Middlecoff's background and stuff. But, John, we told people about where you come from, where you've been and stuff. But I want you to lay this out for the people, man. How did you get into talking about sports and how did that all lay out?
It's funny when you introduce yourself and someone asks you, what do? You know, it's easy when you're like, I sell insurance or I sell cars or, you know, I own a hospital. I don't know. When you're like, I'm a podcaster. They look at you weird. You know, yep. Forever I was like, you know, I'm kind of radio. Now I just say, hey, I'm a podcaster. It goes back to college. I started working in football. I went to Cal Poly. I don't know if you know Ramses Barden. Remember the big wide receiver?
I do.
Played for the Giants and Chris Gokong, who got drafted in the third round by the Eagles. You know, D1AA program, not great, but it had some NFL guys over. Asa Jackson, who I think played for the Ravens. So I've had a few guys over the years, and my first couple years, I thought I was going to work in finance. I was just there as a student. And I slowly got involved with the athletic program, which led to the football program. And it wasn't like going to Alabama or USC where you got to be in a line with like 800 kids just to get your foot in the door. They like handed me a whistle on the first day of like spring practice. And I was helping them do drills. And I really helped with recruiting. And then from that, I went to Fresno State. It wasn't like when I was with the Eagles and I worked with Howie Roseman and some other guys, it was like they knew they wanted to be a GM either when they were done playing or like when they were young. You know, that wasn't necessarily for me. Like most people, I love football, but it kind of organically happened. And then I got a recruiting GA at Fresno State. You know, now you guys follow college football so closely. All these programs have like GMs and personnel departments. That did not really exist in like 08 and 09. Obviously at Fresno State, but even at the USC's with Pete Carroll, like they had like a director of football. Now these programs, one of my buddies, Derek Ray, who was with me at Fresno State, is the GM of Florida State, you know, with a crew of people working for him. And when I was with the Eagles, Ed Manowitz, who was the GM of Alabama, and these guys are all over the place, which is cool. But when I was at Fresno State, it was like we were getting the buses, the foods, the recruiting board, anything with the players, the assistant coaches. It was kind of had your hands. It was probably a little throwback old school, which was awesome. And I got to meet all the scouts in the NFL. And we obviously had guys getting drafted over the years at Fresno State, but Ryan Matthews, right when I got there, was a sophomore and then his junior year. And he clearly was a pretty special talent. And by midway through his junior year, it was clear he was going to go really high in the draft. So the amount of GMs and scouts and you just got to meet them all. It was like, God, I want to work in the NFL. You know, I grew up a big 49er fan, and a buddy on the Eagles had told me they had an opening. It was one of those things. Pat Hill called Andy Reid, interviewed, and then just worked for the Eagles for a couple years. And then my third year, Daniel Jeremiah, who was on our staff when I got there, had left, right? He was kind of tired, I think, of the lifestyle. And he went to NFL Network, and most people in the building, and I worked in the office, you know, they're East Coast people. I was like, I want to go back West. I'm a West Coast guy. And I got the job, and then Andy was fired and I got out of it. And I took on this career, but it was, I was pretty lucky. You know, you don't get to, I would have worked for any team, and I got a chance to, you know, be around Andy and Howie and Veach and a lot of guys. And obviously that coaching staff had, you know, from Matt Nagy, who was a head coach, Sean McDermott, head coach, Todd Bowles, head coach. David Culley was a head coach for a year, you know? Yeah. And a lot of
should have been longer than a year, just throwing it out there, but should have been longer.
Yep. So, it was a Dom DeSandro, who's now a legend. So we had a lot of legends around that building.
John, those 3 years with the Eagles that you spent scouting and evaluating and different stuff like that, give the audience an idea of what it is like to be inside of an NFL building every day. What it's like to be in, and topically to this conversation that we're having, what it's like to be inside of an NFL draft process, and then also talk about what your role was specifically with the Eagles those couple years.
Yeah, I think when you first get there, whether it's a coach, when I got there, Matt Nagy was like the lowest guy on the totem pole, and so was Deuce Staley on the coaching staff, and I was that in the personnel department. You kind of just do whatever needs to get done. Obviously, you know, if you're a coach, you'd love to call plays. If you were me, you'd love to set the draft board. But it's a lot of, you know, taking players to physicals, just doing anything. I did anything basically Howie Roseman needed, whether it was boards, printouts, anything. I mean, you can't even, hell, to go like, you know, he doesn't have time to go get his laundry, right? So, and then from there, you kind of graduate into being a scout. I mean, you technically are then, but you're not. It's not like you're watching tape and no one cares what you're saying about players. But then from there, as you earn your stripes, you kind of gradually, and you're doing a lot of helping out the assistant coaches, which is cool during the season. You're like really inundated with the grind of, you know, I helped out the special teams coach doing things like, the weather on a weekly basis, keeping them updated, injuries, keeping them updated, working with both coordinators. So you feel like you're just kind of part of the operation. And then as you graduate to kind of like the next level, you start advancing opponents. You know, of just, again, you're not telling the coaching staff exactly what plays to run, but just giving them a beat on how guys are playing, tendencies for a team, write-ups, you know, strengths and weaknesses of players, especially with non-common opponents. It's easier with, you know, your divisional opponents, you know them so well. But when you're playing, like, if you're the Eagles and you're playing, like, the Cincinnati Bengals, who you play once every 4 years and stuff like that, so kind of traveling on the road. And then my third year, I did college. So I was really probably more involved in free agency the first couple of years in terms of the board and keeping track of everything for Howie. And then by my third year, I was out on the road, basically doing from Washington down to Arizona, far as El Paso. You know, the West Coast has less schools than the South or even probably the North, but it's spread out, you know. So you just a lot of long hours in the car from Arizona State to Utah to USC. But it was awesome. And then Andy got fired that year. Chip came in and my NFL run came to an end, but I got to do, you know, be in the office. I got to be on the road. I got to be around all these guys, the Super Bowl champions and head coaches. So it was pretty incredible just the way life.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Worked out.
You have a very unique perspective of someone who has spent years behind the Wizard of Oz curtain inside of an NFL building and being a part of all these different processes. And now you're a part of the media on the other side of it. So I'm curious, with both of those perspectives, what you see now as the biggest misnomer that the public has about the NFL draft process as it actually happens within NFL buildings. What's the one thing that the public's just wrong about?
I would say the public, even slash the media, you know, like hot takes and conversations about players. The conversations that you and I would have over J.J. McCarthy or Blake Corum or any, you name any good prospect, or hell, I mean, you guys are really into the weeds, talking about like six rounders. I'm probably not as in depth on that nowadays. But those conversations are happening in the building 24/7, 365. You're just constantly talking about players and coaches. I mean, they're having the same conversations. Now, the opinions differ from person to person, just like they do for us, right? But the conversations, now the one thing that's a lot different inside than it is outside, and I've always thought the media can be very disingenuous about the character stuff. You know, we're talking about $30, $40 million investments. It's, you know, if you were buying a $40 million business, you know, that was just, you know, that sold processors, you would do an in-depth study of everything about that business. No different with a player. They just happen to be a person. And the character, it's easy when the guy's a high character guy. You don't even need, like, whatever, like Drake May or, you name the player. But a lot of players, and it's not necessarily like he's been arrested three times, right? It's just, yeah, he's got some issues, you know? And you just have to figure out, is this a serious thing? Is this something that can improve? You know, he doesn't get along with a coach, let's say. Well, is it the coach's fault? Is it his fault? He's not a great team. You just got to do a lot of research, and it's impossible to quantify. It really is, because I say it all, like Tyrann Mathieu. Guy was kicked out of school. He's been a team captain of four teams. Larry Fitzgerald's like, yeah, he's the leader. I mean, you never know. And we've seen a lot of examples. And I just think this time of year, it actually doesn't feel like this draft has a lot of like kind of wild card people. I mean, it happens. It feels like most years, but it feels like a little tamer this year. Just at least we still got a month to go. So you never know. Some stories could come flying, but that's always an issue. I mean, Jalen Carter is a great example. Like it's now his thing was public, so it was hard for anyone to kind of push back. But some of this stuff in these programs just aren't public. I mean, they're able to cover it up. They're able to, it just doesn't come out, but it doesn't mean it didn't happen. Right. And that's where the other curveball now that's way different than when I was there. Like some of these guys are used to making a lot of money now. Cause one question we'd often ask and you had to dive into with any good prospect was like, how are they going to handle money and fame? It's like Caleb's like, yeah, I've been making like $9 million the last 2 years. You know, I'm a millionaire. I'm going to make more now, but I'm already rich. So I think a lot of the top guys, especially the quarterbacks, right? Like, you know, Bo Nix, Michael Penix. I mean, all these guys at least reported. It's hard. You know, some of the numbers that get reported, you talk to people in the NFL, they're like, yeah, I'm not sure those numbers are right. I think it's pretty true with the quarterbacks. They were making a lot. So you don't have to wonder, like, I wonder how Bo Nix or Michael Penix will handle their first check. It's like, well, yeah, both made a combined $3.5 million last year on a college campus where relative to their new teammates, right? I mean, they were way richer than everybody walking on the University of Washington or the University of Oregon.
Last question for me about your background with the Eagles before we, you know, get into the talking about specifically about the prospects. And I hope you're able to answer this, but if you're not, you know, however, I'm curious, you know, like stacking these boards over the years, I can distinctly remember, you know, my hits and then also my misses. I'm curious with your time with the Eagles, especially in that latter part where you're going onto the campuses, you're watching the kids up close, and then you're doing the video cross checks. And then, like you mentioned, the process of we're all in the building, we all have different opinions on guys we're going to give it. And then the Howie, in that case, he has to sort of mediate these conversations and then parse out, you know, what he finds to be reality at the end of the day. And then you see the draft board. I'm curious if there's any one prospect that you would point back to where you stumped for him, or you pounded the table, you had a conviction, and it you turned out to be right on the other side of it. Is there any one example from your time?
I actually remember when I was a pro scout, and it's hard when you're young. You know, it's easier the longer you're in a building and the better your relationship is if you've been there to really do this pound the table. I mean, you know, most of the guys in their 20s aren't telling Andy Reid or Howie, like, but I forget the league. It was the UFL or the XFL, but Andrew Sendejo, who played for the Vikings for a long time.
Yep.
And I remember watching him and I was like, God, this guy's, he was making a ton of plays in this. The league lasted a year. I forget the exact name of the league, but he was on like the Sacramento Mountain Lions or something. And I remember telling Luce Riddick, I'm like, this guy can play. Now he was, I think he was from Rice, you know, I was at the combine talking to some buddies on the staff. Like, this guy didn't even have a write up in the system, and he probably wasn't written up in a lot of systems. In 2024, most players are probably written up, even if they stink, that they're just in the system. So it's been a lot more automated with technology, but he didn't even exist in the system. And, you know, I didn't have that much pull. It's not like my words went long, but whatever, 8, 9, 10 year career later, and was a starter on some of those really good Vikings defenses. I mean, he was just a solid player, but relative to where you could find him, you know, I think in the draft, right, it's really for a scout. It's not going to be the Nick Bosa's or the, you know, Malik Nabers or whoever, like the top guy. Like, everyone's talking about those guys. You do kind of make your money on pounding the table when you go through a school for like George Kittle in the fifth or Brock Purdy in the seventh. Like, hey, because you're saying like, listen, we all understand this guy's not going to go in the first 2 days of the draft, but we should take this guy. Right. And that's where I think, because your intimate relationship of going, it's not even just I went through Iowa this year. I've been going through Iowa his entire career. Like, I know everything. I know the coaching staff really well. I know all these people. Or you can pick any player, you know, that fits that. Max Crosby, whoever. You know, guys, third day, which, let's face it, is littered the league of starting players. You know, guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, which is the most boring time for the average fan when they're turning on the TV on Saturday. But, like, we look back in 3 years, and you get a ton of credit for that. You know, because ultimately, let's just pick a team. Let's say the Arizona Cardinals stay at 4 and they take Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison and he becomes awesome. It's like, yeah, it's a really good pick, but it's like, yeah, I mean, it's not that complicated. But if you get the equivalent of, think about like the Debo, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf in the second round, you just do get more credit as a GM. Like, Nick Bosa is one of the 49ers' best players. He's the number 2 pick in the draft, right? So you do have to figure that out though, because you're allocating so much money. And the power of that pick if you can trade back. So I'm not trying to diminish, like, it's necessarily easier, because it's easier in the sense you get to see, like, you're dealing with the best players, but there is more pressure because of the money and because of the opportunity cost of moving picks. But, like, you really make your hay and after pick like 100, because if you can hit on a couple of those guys, you get like 2 guys that start on your team. What if one makes a Pro Bowl and they're making like $800,000?
Yeah, so that's really where it reels it out, man. I love that you brought that up, John, because especially the last few draft classes, the ones off the top of my head that I can think of where teams have really separated themselves. Like, we could talk about the Rams class from last. We could talk about Puka. We could talk about all the defensive guys they hit on, where they're walking out of last class and everybody used to make the jokes about, oh, well, the Rams just give all their picks away. Well, they smashed last class, so when they keep their picks, they're doing pretty freaking good with their selections. As well as, I think it was, what, two or three years? No, it's longer than that. The Saints class, where they got Kamara, they got like half of their starting
defense. It was like 17, I think it was.
Yeah, like every single pick was a home run. They were just hitting dingers left and right, man. It's like, that's where NFL franchises, and we talk about the Eagles, you know, where they pick up these middle round guys, and they end up being full-time starters, Pro Bowl guys, that vastly outplay their rookie contracts. And that's really why we wanted to bring you on and talk about our guys of this NFL draft class, man, because there's a laundry list of guys, and we're going to run through our top guys. So we're picking one guy from quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And I think we have a really good mix of names here. Guys that are going to go at the top of the board, some guys that are going to go middle and late, especially considering the outward thoughts on the tight end class after Brock Bowers and the running back class, man. But I won't pander too much longer here. John, lead us off here, man. Let's get into quarterbacks. Who is your guy, if you're going to stick your neck out this year and say, this is the quarterback I really want a team to draft and I believe in?
Well, let me preface it by this. It's pretty clear this guy is not considered to be in the top group. And, you know, it's hard with quarterback inflation. Does the guy fall to the second round? But I've watched Michael Penix for 2 years. And if you're telling me I can get that guy in the second round, and I thought he's clearly a pocket quarterback, which the red flags are fair. The injuries, when he first got to Indiana, he was a dual threat guy. And then you get injured. And obviously you come to Washington and you know, they were kind of pumping their chest. They had the best offensive line. It was clear Michigan was. But their offensive line, relative to the Pac-12, was awesome. And he didn't get touched. What do you have? Like, got sacked 11 times. But he didn't move that much because he didn't have to. So when I comped, and again, it's an easy one because they're both left-handed. But the thing with Tua is sometimes you see these little guys, and most little guys, you know, have been like Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson. Like, they're athletes. And then you're like, well, some other little guys or smaller guys, like Baker Mayfield is a pocket quarterback. He's not a scrambler, though sometimes out of like pulls plays out of his ass and scrambles around. But that's not his style. Bryce Young, definitely not a scramble. Like, he's a pocket player. And Tua definitely is too. Now, Tua never ran, right, because he hurt his hip at Alabama, so in the process. But I'll promise you this, even pre the hip injury, Tua was not running a 4.55. And definitely not jumping 36 and a half inches. So Michael Penix is a really good athlete. So if you're telling me I can get this guy who's had this level of success for 2 years, again, this is predicated, like, I understand, like, I couldn't take him super high. But if we're talking about a guy who's there at like 33, or even maybe late in the first round, you're a team that trades up, and I get this guy on that, you know, that 5-year contract, that I don't know, man. It speaks for itself. The deep ball accuracy, it did concern me when he got injured. Not injured, but like hit against Michigan and Oregon, who I would say are two more physical teams he played. He looked like he was struggling by the end of the game to like get up off the field. So obviously the NFL is really physical, but that could, Jaden Daniels, 210 pounds, give me a break. He weighs 195 pounds. I mean, just look at the guy. And again, he's obviously a much more athletic guy in terms of explosive, can run away, but it's, sometimes the weight's fake. I'll never forget a scout telling me when he went to the weigh-in for Bryce Young, he's like, that dude waddled up there. I don't know what was in his body, creatine, the pasta. And then he said, I think he waddled right to the bathroom after, which is weight at some positions. Like, I remember Devontae Smith when the Eagles drafted him.
Yep.
I talked to a buddy that does the SEC. I'm like, God, this guy's like 155 pounds. I mean, what was he? Like 168 or whatever he was.
Yeah, he was like, I'm not touching the scale, baby.
This guy's going to play in the NFL. And he's like, John, this has always been his size. And he's played against the best players in the country, not just in the conference, but in practice every day. He knows how to use it. And this isn't 1997 where John Lynch is waiting for you across the middle. But at quarterback, I think it was pretty clear, and I'm not trying to play revisionist history here. Like, I was anti this guy. I thought Bryce Young was really good. But it didn't take long. A couple weeks in, you're like, this guy looks tiny. How is this going to work? And it's like, Kyler is small, but he's built, and he can fly. And he's got a huge arm. Like, you're watching Bryce, like, where are the traits? So
yeah, you got to have the superpowers, man. If you're going to be a little bit shorter and you're going to play from the pocket, you have to have some of those superpowers. It's like, how are you going to cape up? How are you going to win from the pocket and win on certain plays? Absolutely.
And that's where I think the Penix pro day was eye-opening, just in the, like, this guy's a big-time athlete. Because we just been talking about him like a pocket quarterback. Like, he's Jared Goff or Tua or something. It's like, well, this guy can really run. And I'm not saying they're going to ask him to do that consistently, but he has it in the bag. So if you're talking about a guy that you can get, and who knows, I don't know where you guys think he ends up going, but between like 30 and 45, like, that's pretty good value for a guy that's done what he's done.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think he makes it into the first round? Because I've seen him mocked anywhere, depending on what you're looking at around the industry, him going top 15. Like, I've seen him going in the middle of the first round of the Raiders. I've seen him fall to the second round. Where do you think he gets into the first round?
Well, if the four guys go in some order, 1 through 4, mm-hmm. that's four quarterbacks off the board. So who yep. else? These other teams that need a quarterback, if the Raiders, what's Sean Payton going to do? Just play with Jarrett Stidham and some other random? Like, what?
Have an anxiety attack for most of the first round?
Well, exactly.
Is that what I'm guessing?
So I think it's definitely in play now because of some of the variables of his injury history. I guess he could fall, but we have seen. I don't know where you guys stood on these two guys, but Kenny Pickett and Mac Jones, I thought historically, are like third, fourth round picks.
Yeah, like we were not big on Kenny Pickett. I can definitely say I know Thor wasn't either. I don't know where he sat on Mac Jones, but I was not a Pickett guy. I was like, look, this is a team burning a first-round pick. You're putting yourself in a quarterback purgatory.
It's crazy.
And that's the worry, like, when you get into these positional talks, and it's like the quarterbacks are going to go higher then some of them are justified or should, you know, like we could talk about where Penix goes, where Bo Nix goes in the draft, and should Nix be a first round, second round guy? Like I've got a third round grade on him, you know, but where these guys go in the draft is definitely up for debate.
So we all agree like Penix's skill set relative to those two guys who went 20 and 15 is far superior.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Penix can run circles, literally run circles and throw the ball. Like now around that,
you could also come back as like, well, I hope so. It's like Mac Jones and Kenny Pickett, which is true. Yeah. But you do have to, this is part of the draft, kind of comp where other guys have gone, factor in that this draft, you know, it's not super loaded at certain positions. So beside the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and the tackles, like it's not like there's a million Miles Garrett and Nick Bosa sitting there. Doesn't feel like there's Sauce Gardner and Stingley and all these corners. So you got to factor that in too. Like to me, the thing I love most about the draft, the older I get, it's like an economic exercise. It's not just about like, we think this guy's going to be really good, but what price do I have to pay to get the guy that I think is going to be really good? Because and this is where coaches and front office people butt heads, right? They're like, just take my guy now. It's like, well, we can get him in 20 picks. So let's try to just trade back like 10, get an extra fourth rounder and still get the same guy. And that's where it's a fine line to play. It's why the best GMs don't just know how to evaluate the best players. But like, and I was around Howie, his manipulating the draft. And a lot of these guys now exist, right? Minnesota's guy, Andrew Berry, some of the more number-centric guy. That's key. But you also, to know where to go, you also have to understand like the talent in the draft and who likes who. So there's so many variables. But it's more than just, well, let's just draft this guy because he's going to be a good player. Well, could you get this guy around later? Because if you could, then that's a terrible draft pick.
Well,
in terms of value of your pick.
No, I agree. And that's what I think is another like interesting storyline of this draft is, now we're going to get to the wide receivers on this episode, but this is a really deep class for tackles and wide receivers. So are you going to go the elite top shelf guys at the top of the draft? Are you going to trade back and then try to like fill out your wide receivers? Because a lot of these teams need wide receivers. Are they going to try to fill those needs in round two? Or some of the guys we're going to talk about that might maybe go round three. But Thor, I know we've talked about Michael Penix on previous episodes and stuff. And look, I'm not trying to bury because I know you're chomping at the bit to sit here and bring up JJ McCarthy, man. But quick thoughts on Penix, because I know we've talked about at least some of the concerns about his game, and the testing was fantastic. His ability to run the 40 and go out there and jump and show teams that he has the mobility. Some of the times we didn't see that at Washington, but what are your thoughts on him? Because I know we've talked on previous episodes, and I'm curious John's thoughts on it, about his ability to play from the pocket, but if he's pushed off his spot, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's funny. When I was on John's show a couple of weeks ago on The Volume, we talked a little bit about the NFL Combine props. And D-Bro, you and I, we are heavy in the NFL Combine 40 prop market. One of the picks that I put out that drew the most raised eyebrows was when I went under Michael Penix's 40 number, which was initially, I think, even in low 4.7s. And then it got
4.7s last time we saw it.
Well, the last time, so it got pushed down into the 4.6s. And I was even going under at the mid 4.6s the day that he was going to test. Obviously, he ended up not doing that at the combine. But again, people were very surprised. But what I had heard in his pre-combine testing, the training down there, that he was dusting that number, that he was consistently running in the 4.5s, which it was a surprise to people out there. I think the eventual number that he put out at the pro day, just because you didn't see him running as much at Washington. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. But, you know, John mentioned this before. When he went to Indiana, he was a good athlete. Coming out, he was seen as a dual threat guy. You guys remember the COVID season when they upset Penn State and he runs around, he has to reach the ball out at the goal line. That kid made some plays outside the pocket, more so at Indiana. I think one of the factors why he didn't do so as much at Washington, than two factors. One, it's DeBoer's system. But number two, I think there was a little bit of protecting him, the durability stuff. First 4 years at Indiana, he had a season-ending injury each time. Washington effectively protected him in that regard, both with the awesome offensive line, which John was mentioning. We're going to see a bunch of Washington Husky offensive linemen going off the board this year in the draft. But, you know, you had that. And then as well, you sort of inoculate him from that. But I don't have as many concerns about that, but I think you do need to keep him inside the pocket. You see a little bit of depreciation with the accuracy when his feet are moving. I'll be interested to see at the next level, will they allow him to leave the pocket more like they did at Indiana, because he can get north-south real quick. And now he has proven that even after the injuries, he still has that. But can you do that while still protecting him health-wise, I guess will be the big thing.
I'm not comparing him to this guy because obviously he had an incredible rookie season. He was awesome in college too. But when CJ had that game against Georgia and it was clear, like, wow, this guy's a really, really good athlete, I think it just makes you view a player who is a pocket player and then it's like, well, he really can move if he has to. Like, one thing, like Jared Goff has turned his career around for sure. But he is very dependent on the offensive line, the protection. Like, he can't, you know, it's like Cousins. Like, if you get to him, he can't get away. He's just relative to, you know, not human beings, but NFL players. Like, they're just bad athletes. So they can't ad lib. They don't have that capability. It's very old school. And that player, for the most part, coming into the league doesn't really exist anymore, right? Most guys have some movement skills. Like, even, like I said, Bryce Young is not a good athlete relative to a lot of NFL players. He still can move, right? But I wouldn't consider him like Mr. Scramble guy.
Yeah, and I mean, you're going to see, I mean, every one of these prospects, regardless of position, they win in different ways. We know Penix is going to have to win from the pocket, but a guy that, Thor, we've talked about, and you're a guy for the quarterback situation that can play off script, has shown that he's a better athlete than people give him. Let's talk about the three cone. But come on, man, go ahead, lay out the love list, the love letter, go ahead, take the pen out. I know you want to sit here and write it right now for J.J. McCarthy. Floor is yours, dude.
Yeah, I know everyone's surprised that my guy, quarterback,
I know, is shocking, J.J. McCarthy. Totally shocking.
I finally had time to get my dentist appointment in on Friday, and the guy comes, you know, first the dental assistant brings you in, and they do whatever they do, and then she's like, you know, I'll go and get the dentist, and then he comes in, and he starts in there for a second, and then he goes, are you the J.J. McCarthy guy?
No. No, he didn't. Are you serious?
Swear to God. And I was like, I guess I am. And he's like, I thought so. So I guess that's what I am now. But this shouldn't be any surprise to anyone. I've waxed poetic about JJ on these airwaves multiple times, so I'll keep my comments short. Good athlete. Very good arm. Both of those things were confirmed at the combine as if they needed to. They're all over his film. Favorite thing about his projection to the NFL, those two things work in conjunction on the field. There's guy. Joe Milton would be a good example of a guy who has a bazooka for an arm. He's an awesome athlete. Those things absolutely do not work in conjunction with one another on the field. They do with J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy, when he's moving around, gets even more dangerous, throws frozen ropes to all three sectors of the field. The mechanics are always sound when he's on the move, keeps the eyes downfield, keeps the upper body cocked, keeps that throwing platform under him so he can get the ball out quick when he makes the decisions. 72.3% completion percentage last year in the aggregate, but when scrambling, 71.4%, which is pretty absurd, not losing anything off of that when moving. Tough kid, a sort of a nuance about his film that I really appreciated. A lot of quarterback film that you see when the guy's about to get decked, this is even going to the NFL, you will see in some small way that they will brace for that hit or they'll fade away a little bit. Very, very rare instances where you get a quarterback film where the guy never does. He steps fully into that throw and he will eat the shot every single time. J.J. McCarthy is that guy. That helps his accuracy, of course, under duress and his ability under duress. And, of course, he is one of the better quarterbacks in this class under pressure by the numbers. The adjusted completion percentage, the on-target percentage, last year he was number 5 in the nation in on-target accuracy percentage. A lot of stuff to like about his projection to the NFL. I've been pounding the table the whole time. This is a top 5 prospect in the draft, and it appears that that's what's going to happen later this month.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been with you. We've been riding on the J.J. McCarthy training before it was cool. I mean, we got takes out there since February, man. We were talking about J.J. betting the odds for him to go 2nd overall, betting the odds for him to go 3rd overall, and everybody said we were crazy at that time. Doesn't look so crazy now, but John, before I give my guy, because we already brought up Jaden Daniels, at least off the cuff a little bit here, what are your thoughts on J.J.? Because I haven't heard your J.J. McCarthy take.
I looked at some of his testing numbers. You know, I watched him play like anyone the last couple of years because Michigan's been one of the best teams in the country. And when you just watch him in a vacuum sometimes, like on your couch, you go, the conversation's changed, I would say, over the last couple months in terms of the universal, like he's going to go really high. I didn't necessarily see a top 10 player, but when you factor in age, when you factor in what he was asked to do, and like you said, his numbers and situational spots, he had some athletic testing numbers that were very, very similar to Alex Smith. Now, Alex was taller, but one element that he has that Alex, he has a much stronger arm. Like if I gave Alex, let's use Alex as an example. Let's use the pitcher analogy. Like Alex was a pitcher, but he threw 89 miles an hour and he was solid. Like he was getting guys. Imagine if Alex Smith had thrown 94, 95, right? So he would have been, everyone would have agreed he's a top 7-8 quarterback. So yeah, I mean, I think if you do the, and I text with a couple of scouting buddies that like, yeah, that's a pretty good comp. So he's a more powerful Alex Smith. Obviously the character stuff, ironically, he played for Harbaugh as well, but yeah, I mean, I think this guy is a 100% lock to go really high. I think the only question mark is would Adam Peters take him at 2 over Drake May? Or you know, Jaden Daniels is kind of, no one quite has a good feel for it. I guess it could be any of the three guys. And then how it would go, like, no one has any clue what New England's going to do because they've had the same guy running it for 25 years. Now they got new people that have never done that job. So nothing would shock me. And it's pretty clear Arizona's going to trade back. So he'd go anywhere from 2 to 4, but I think it's pretty clear he's going somewhere between 2 and 4, right?
Yep, agreed. I mean, I think, like we've said from the very beginning of the process, like he's probably going to be a top 8 lock. Probably really now it's looking like top 5, and whether we think like 4 quarterbacks just go bam, 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 bam off the board or New England trades back, we've said that they've been a fantastic, them in Arizona is where you want to trade into. Like if the Chargers don't trade back and there's all the speculation, I think any one of those teams, that's, I think the top 2 teams are locked into their spots. They're both going to take quarterbacks. But after that, we'll kind of see how the board evolves. It could kind of go chalk and we see all the quarterbacks fly. We could see a lot of trades and stuff, man. But the guy that I think is going to go off the board no later than number top 3 again, and I love his fit. I think he's probably going to go to Washington, and we've been discussing that in the fit with Cliff Kingsbury. My guy is Jaden Daniels, man. I love him in this process. I love his game. I love the evolution that he's taken on as a player and the growth. And everybody's first thing about, okay, what about the pressure to sack ratio and all these different types of things? It's like, we need to also throw some of the stuff for Arizona, like Arizona State out. Like, just toss that out, man, because players continue to evolve their games and situations change. And it's, you know, we want to knock, okay, Jaden Daniels because he played with really talented players. Didn't we do this with CJ Stroud? Didn't we do this with Joe Burrow? Like, if you're watching the film and you can tell what is good quarterback play versus, okay, who's elevating who? And I'm not saying that Jaden Daniels is pulling these guys along for the ride, but Brian Thomas Jr. is a very talented wide receiver in his own right. Is he the type of talent that, where I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve to go in the first round, but is he this otherworldly talent like Rome or top 3 and stuff? No, I think he's a little more limited of a player. And I think Jaden Daniels deserves all the hype that he's getting, man. Like the duplicity in his game, what he can do to change the equation with both his legs and his arm. And I think that he can win, first of all, from the pocket, is where you're talking about, you're giving defensive coordinators at the NFL all these different types of equations to solve for on a moment-to-moment basis, and Jaden Daniels makes it tough, man, because all the things he can do from the pocket. Now, I know you brought up his weight earlier. I mean, yeah, that's a big concern. It's a big concern because of the style of how he runs, and there's enough clips and things out on social media of him getting blown up, blown out of his shoes when he's running through the middle and stuff, but I mean, some of that, can we come down to like, maybe it's coaching, and can you teach a guy, okay, maybe you should run out of bounds here, maybe you should slide, instead of getting absolutely just blown out of the stadium. But Thor, I know you love Jaden Daniels, but what are your thoughts on him? Do you think he deserves, like, do you think he's definitely locked into the top 2 spots, or could you see Washington going with JJ over him?
No, I agree with the odds boards that it is a true 3-horse race at this point for the number 2 pick. You know, I think all the 3 of those guys are still in consideration. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind with the NFL draft process, and John knows this, that these decisions aren't made way, way, way in advance. Like, the, you know, you all the different people inside the building, they bring their perspectives on these different guys. Those conversations will be hashed out. I would be surprised if Mr. Peters and the Washington organization, they 1,000% knew today. There might be a lean of some of those top decision makers, but I still believe that it is a three-horse race there, and they are actively evaluating those three different guys.
Well, moving over to running backs, John, I love the fact that we're a very Michigan-centric show today. A guy that has been talked about a lot through the process, I'm very curious where he goes in the NFL draft. There's been a lot of, okay, well, does a certain team with a certain head coach that loves to run the ball draft him in the second or the third round? But your guy at the running back position is Blake Corum, man. What are your thoughts on him, and where do you see him going in the NFL draft? Like, lay out the case here for us, man.
Well, obviously, he's not very big. You know, when he measures in, it's kind of, you know, glaring. Small arms, short. But, you know, he had his receiving numbers probably don't parallel this guy, but a lot like Frank Gore was to Jim when he was with the 49ers.
That's my exact comp for Corum. That's my exact comp. I love
it. And to me, those guys... I mean, what are we talking? We're talking about a pick probably past 75, right? So we're not drafting this guy in the second round. But I just think this guy knows how to play. And running back's one of those positions where, you know, we'll talk about my wide receiver who gets knocked for being a little slower, which, you know, is a fair argument. But running back in terms of like high-end speed, like most guys are not Adrian Peterson home run hitters. Right, it's about making guys miss. It's about falling forward. It's about instincts are huge. Instincts, foot quickness, comfortability in terms of inside outside runs. Obviously, in this modern day football, you got to be able to catch the ball. His receiving numbers aren't great, but I think he has solid hands. Like it's not like he can't do it. Because if I'm going to draft a guy in the third or fourth round, which easily can immediately become your starter or mix in with your starter. He's got to be able to catch the ball in this, the way the football is played now. And clearly, like, and this is a big theme we haven't really touched on. And this, the quarterback thing is 10x all these other positions, you know, the character, the football intelligence. And from what, I mean, the information I have, most of these guys at quarterback are definitely good guys. So you're really nitpicking like, who you feel really, really comfortable in talking about how the decision hasn't been made. Obviously it hasn't been made at other positions because you're still going through all the scenarios, but at quarterback, you know, you're eating dinner and spending time with the people. And it's pretty clear Blake Corum is just my type guy. I mean, I really value, you know, just football junkies. Like that's pretty clear. Most of the great players in the NFL are just, there's not much balance in terms of their love and dedication for the sport of football. And there are only so many people in the league that are like Trent Williams, or that are so much freakier than everyone else. The margin for difference of the average player and the higher end player, I don't think is that wide. And to me, I have a hard time seeing Blake Corum. I don't know if he's a Pro Bowler. I wouldn't go that far, but just being a contributing player immediately. And if you can get that guy, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he's there in the fourth round. You know, it's not viewed as a very good, from, you know, talking to my scouting buddies, a great running back tight end draft. So it's going to be very, you know, what you like. And I've loved this guy for years. He's just my type player. And you play for Harbaugh, the physicality, the toughness, like that translates, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about the work ethic. One thing with Corum that, at least when I was going through him for the evaluation portion, that really kind of stuck out to me, and maybe this is less of a concern, with that type of work ethic, with the massive, we have to talk about the massive injury that he sustained at Michigan. Are you higher or about his ability to rehab and get back to being the guy? Because there's a big difference when you watch his 2023 tape, and rightfully so, coming back from the injury, versus the guy he was in 2021, where he is, I mean, his tape just explodes. His lateral agility, his foot speed, especially in traffic, is really freaking fun to watch. Do you think he can get back to being that guy in 2021?
Yeah, and that's a huge part of the evaluation, right? Is he going to be better out 2 years, 3 years than he was a year out? You know, the wear and tear that he just has in general in that program and the amount of carries, that would have to be something, obviously. And there's another big part of the draft, right? All these guys, the physical elements that you have to rely on your doctors and trainers, like coaches and the scouts just aren't medical professionals. So when they say, hey, this knee injury, and this happens with running backs probably more than most positions of like, yeah, this guy might be a one contract guy. Right. And that was, remember Jay Ajayi, who's famously like was one of the best running backs in the country. All of a sudden, what, he go in like the fourth round? Because most people thought like he just, it could go 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. I think he ended up probably playing a little longer than people expected, but the knees, the lower body with that position is just, you have to feel comfortable with it. But yeah, I mean, I would bet on, this is why you bet on people, right? Because the rehab, the work ethic, do whatever you have to do to get back to strength. Now that there's a chance that this is also the hard part about the business. Maybe he's never the same. And that's the reason, like, if he had looked the same and not had the injury, we're probably talking about a guy, even with his size, being a top 75 pick, right? Now we're talking about a guy falling a little bit, just because he, definitely from an explosion standpoint, wasn't quite, which is something he's going to hang his hat on. So, it's, you know, you'd have to be betting on that because he's not built like Adrian Peterson.
No, absolutely. And the early down rushing talent is there, but over to a guy that we talked about, Quorum, the acumen there, over to a guy that's still learning the running back position. Thor, people that are looking for the deep dives of this class, you have an interesting name here, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're gonna stay in the Big Ten with Tyrone Tracy Jr. This running back class, it's not as attractive, certainly at the top. I do think that there's some interesting guys when you get later on. Tracy's a guy who is going to go at some point on Saturday, might even be at the very later stages or latter stages of Saturday's sixth, seventh round. Could get a little bit higher because of the testing, but it is going to be on that day three that I think has the ceiling to compare with some of the guys that are in the consensus top 5-6 in this class. Tyrone Tracy, 5'11", 209, 977 RAS, 448 wheels. And what really opened my eyes about him, as D-Bro knows, I went to graduate school at Iowa. I watch all the Iowa Hawkeye games live. So I had seen the first 4 years of Tyrone Tracy live.
That's a lot of bad offense you're watching live.
A lot of bad offense. And Tyrone Tracy decided to abandon ship there of, I'm not getting developed here, and it's probably not the right position either. The Iowa coaching staff had tried to talk to Tyrone Tracy about being about moving from wide receiver to running back. He was resistant to that in Iowa City. So then he transfers to Purdue. That coaching staff was effectively able to convince him to do that. This past season is when he truly broke out. I wasn't prepared for the tape that I saw with him. It really opened my eyes. Tyrone Tracy this past season, 163.5 elusive rating. That's incredible. 4.44 yards after contact per attempt. Both those were the highest of any of my top 30 running backs in this class. People need to keep in mind that Purdue team was terrible this past season. It was terrible, bad offensive line, new coaching staff that was extremely risk averse with their offensive strategy because they had a quarterback that doesn't throw down the field very much. And I think also trying to protect that offensive line. So it was a lot of just sort of straightforward concepts, different stuff like that. Tracy was still racking up all these explosive plays. He's a bouncy, juiced up, wide base slasher with better vision and instincts than I had expected heading into that. Especially with this guy being new to the position of running back. He runs with tempo. He has a knack for timing cutbacks to free himself into open grass. And by the way, and tangentially to where the NFL is going, these skills will play in the new paradigm of the kick returning rules. Tyrone Tracy, last year, Purdue deployed him as a returner. He brought one back for a touchdown. He showed explosion there as well. The explosive runs that we have seen and his ability to do damage in space, that is going to translate to the next level. Last thing that I'll say, and D-Bro and I had a laugh about this because we had the same thing in our notes that we independently saw with this. Watching his receiving cut up was very frustrating. Gosh, talking geez, about man. The straightforward concepts of the Purdue thing. All of his catches, it was one of two things. It was either the same concept if it was designed. They would fake a handoff one way, and then Tracy would go the other way, and the quarterback would do a swing pass. The defense always knew what was coming. So right after he got the ball, there'd be defenders there that were already flowing to him. He couldn't do anything with it. His only other targets were when the quarterback was under duress, and he was the fourth option on the play. If the quarterback was like, well, I'm going to get sacked if I don't just throw it to Tyrone. Well, he didn't have any room there. I think in the NFL, you can expand that more. You can let him fly a little bit more as a receiver, but he has already shown that ability as a runner, especially early on the development curve. I think a team is going to get a steal on Saturday with Tyrone Tracy.
I mean, when you could take a collegiate wide receiver that's converted to running back, and then you can only use him 26 snaps out wider in the slot, you have to do it, right? Yeah, exactly. Like, you can only use him on swing passes and nothing creative at all as Purdue. Like, you have to do that. Absolutely. I mean, of course, that's why you're going to field the best offense. But moving over from Purdue's woeful situation to a guy that I've talked about him throughout numerous shows. I've got to bring him up here. Marshawn Lloyd's a guy I've loved in this entire process. He runs freaking mean. In Mobile, that was the first thing I had to ask him. I was like, who hurt you, man? Like, where do you get this attitude, dude, where you're running? He's a tone-setting running back. And whether you want to talk about the numbers, he's top 20 in basically every efficiency, elusivity metric that you could pull up over the last 2 years, or you're turning on the film and he's got the ability to create yards on his own. In Mobile, he showed the ability to be a three down back, beating guys on angle routes, beating guys on a wheel route to close two specific practices day after day with standout plays. So Marshawn Lloyd's one of the few true three down running backs, I think, in this class. I'm very interested to see where he goes, but I've loved this entire process, man. But from the loveless guys over to a platform that you all should love out there, and I know we've talked about this on previous episodes, we got to mention it here again, Reality Sports Online. It's a powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy teams like an NFL general manager. The question is, have you tried it yet? It's time to go see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, and so much more. It sounds complicated. It's really not. It just requires another level of strategy. If you think you're among the fantasy elite, you got to try it out today, man. Test out your general manager skills for free with a mock free agency auction. Use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. That is the promo code FANTASYPROS for a 10% discount on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com. All right, boys, we are into the fun part of this class, man. The wide receiver position, the guys that we've talked about on numerous episodes. John, kick it off here, man. I know you love this guy. Hey, look, there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle. Tell me why you love Keon Coleman.
Okay, I'm biased. Like I mentioned earlier, my guy Derek Ray, who's basically the GM there, I was on the phone with him in training camp before the LSU game, and he's like, God, we got a couple of wideouts, transfer portal, watch out. Obviously, that, you know, he busted on the scene, Keon Coleman, in that game. What, he had three touchdowns? I mean, it was just like, geez, this is going to work. And I understand with bigger bodied contested catch guys that don't run really fast, it's a concern. Right, because if you're going to hang your hat on just constant contested catches, it's going to be difficult to have a career. Like, you can't just – DeAndre Hopkins is an outlier, not normal, right? But, you know, and this guy ran faster, but Mike Williams is an example who wasn't – I wouldn't call a blazer. Now, he plays pretty fast, who was drafted 7th overall. And this guy, his ball skills, his touch – you know, his ability in space, or I mean, in a contested catch in space to high point the ball, is pretty special. And I was looking before I hopped on. I was like, just double check this guy. He's 20 years old right now. So he's about to turn 21. And we've seen guys, physical wide receivers who are young, a different player, but like Juju was really young when he came into the NFL. Right. And you just get a guy. And this is why part of the reason why I like him is it's pretty clear the top guys we're all talking about going really high. Right. The top three guys going within the top, 12? You know, I mean, this is a guy now we're talking about as a second round pick. Right. So I can get this guy in the second round who will be 20 years old when I draft him. Now he turns, I think, 21 in May. But I mean, you're talking about a very young and, let's face it, pretty raw guy. The basketball background, I do wonder too, like, once you really focus, can he just improve with the quickness a little bit? Like, I'm not looking for him to become DeSean Jackson here, but I just think that his physicality, how natural he is in the air. The other thing is, so many teams now because I was thinking about this today when I was thinking about what wide receiver to give you guys. Just like a lot of these players, right? Like Jaden Daniels is a good example. He's going to be very dependent on who his coordinator is, how they ask him to play. Most quarterbacks are not like Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning probably would have succeeded no matter what. Most guys are not that. Like Lamar Jackson, who has become a great player, benefited a lot from falling and going to the Ravens. He obviously had an easier path in the sense of goes to a high level place with a good defense and who just can like pivot and change their offense around in a heartbeat, blink of an eye. So to me, if he goes to a place that already has speed on the outside, which it feels like a lot of teams just have, I mean, there's just versatile wide receivers on so many squads, and he can kind of play. Now, ideally, if you're taking this guy in the second round, you want him to be a better player. But like, think about Juwan Jennings right now for the Niners, who plays in the slot, such a big body. And the way he's playing right now, can he be like that immediately? Use him in the red zone. I just think he has traits that translate. And from what I've heard, people liked him at Florida State, like work ethic. And like I said, the youth, and this is what J.J. McCarthy has going for him. It's like you part of the draft is not just about 2024, especially with higher picks, you know, in the first couple rounds. It's about like over the next course of 2 or 3 years as they maybe replace some of my starters that I let go in free agency. So you'd be betting on kind of the future a little bit with this guy. Because, you know, I think most people would agree he's still pretty raw, which is crazy when you look at it with his production. And I don't know where you guys stand. I don't quarterback, sad story with the ankle and how it, I thought he was a pretty average player, you know, just kind of flinging. He wasn't exactly playing with Jaden Daniels there.
Yep.
Agreed.
Yeah. And I think the quarterback, when you're looking at the counting stats and especially the archetype of players, playing with guys, and the name that pops into my mind when Keon Coleman's brought up is Kenny Golladay too. Same type of archetype. Contested catch guy, not the greatest separator. We could talk about route running and things like that for days, man. But I think like the quarterback play is it's paramount there, because not only are you talking about like his skill set and how that translates, but also the quarterback play. And you have to have quarterbacks that not only have the arm talent to fit the ball into the contested situations, but are willing to grip it and rip it and throw into those situations. Like some quarterbacks are not willing to do that. They want to see guys running open, you know, and how that looks, man. And so looking at Florida State, it was a grab bag of all like quarterback play, what he was asked to do, his role, all those different types of things. But staying in Florida, Thor, you got a chance to interview this player at Senior Bowl. And I know you're enamored with his game, man. Just go ahead. Just spit the good news on Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah. Ricky Pearsall is my guy at wide receiver. Last 3 years, he was the wide receiver one for Jaden Daniels, the aforementioned Jaden Daniels, then Anthony Richardson, then Graham Mertz last year. And now he's coming off this dominant pre-draft process. He impressed us down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, had a very eye-opening NFL combine showing, tested as a better athlete than I thought he would. 9.91 RAS on the full gamut of tests at 6'1", 189. Tremendous route runner, both against man and against zone. He has a very good feel for that. Modulates tempo, the head and shoulder fakes, the hard cuts, coaxes false steps out of the defenders across from him, introduces doubt in their head. You know, he just, you can never get a beat on what he's doing. And then he also keeps working on extended plays to freelance himself open. Best part of his eval, though, is the ridiculous hands. You know, and this is the thing I talk with him about in Mobile. This guy who had been a staple of the SportsCenter top 10 going back years and years and years. D-Bro, that catch against Charlotte that he had, the one-handed catch where then he gets sick. Crushed. One of the great catches that we've seen in college football over the last decade. Mm-hmm. But it's not just a one-off. The kid, 86.8 PFF hands grade last year. Spears balls outside of his frame on the move with regularity. Obviously, he is just about money in the bank with anything inside of his frame. You do not see that guy drop anything. The concentration, very, very good. He showed the collegiate versatility that he could play on the inside and outside. When we spoke to him in Mobile, he said the NFL was predominantly at that time talking to him about the slot. I wonder if how well he tested. Again, 9.9, he tested as a 99th percentile size-adjusted athlete on the full gamut of tests. I wonder if that, in conjunction with his tape, the NFL or the team that ends up taking him, who obviously will be higher on him because that's how the draft works, if they will use him as he was in college, where you both use him on the inside and the outside, that would be my suggestion. I think he's proven that he could probably do that. but even just as an NFL slot, he's going to be able to start immediately. He's going to do some damage. He's going to be a high volume type target guy in the NFL.
Yeah, big agree, man. And you know, I've come around on Pearsall more after I went back to the tape, after we had more tape coming back from Senior Bowl and stuff. I think that he's a route runner for days and days. I think that all the puff and praise, especially after the top shelf testing, man, he deserves all of it. And a guy that did not test like a top shelf athlete, and I wasn't surprised on this. My guy is Javon Baker, has been Javon Baker, remains Javon Baker. And a lot of this comes down to he's being underrated in this process. And I think he's going to go higher than people believe in the NFL draft. I'm not surprised by any of the testing. I thought he was a 4-5 guy. I thought all of his short area agility stuff was going to come in great, like good, but not great. And I think that if you look at him, people could talk about the drops and stuff. Look at the role he was playing at UCF. He was the downfield guy, and he can be that. He can stretch the field, but it's not because of raw speed. It's because of how good he is as a route runner and manipulating corners. I think Javon Baker is going to be a high volume guy in the NFL. I think some team is going to get a steal for a player that last year was eighth in yards per route run against all FBS wide receivers, at least 50 targets. You look at all the guys that had boatload, 98 guys that had a boatload of contested catch situations. He was 20th in contested catch rate. So we could talk about the drops and we could talk about, oh, the testing and stuff like that. I care about your route running and I care about the other parts about your game. And so Javon Baker has been my guy, remains my guy. But over to the tight end position, boys. John, just kick us off here, man. One of the best players, most talented guys in the draft. Thor and I have talked about him. I can't wait to hear your take on him, but we've discussed him as not just being the best tight end in this class, but he is an offensive weapon. Why is Brock Bowers your guy?
I think he's one of the better prospects in recent memory. Like, just pound for pound. If he played quarterback, I mean, he'd be like, we'd be talking about like him, like he's Caleb Williams or something. I mean, I'm biased. People from Northern California, and he went to Napa High School, and you know, a lot of guys that are star players in the Sacramento Bay Area end up at Oregon, end up at Washington, end up at USC. This guy went to the prominent program in the country and was, I would say, relatively immediately, arguably their best player on a team with, I haven't seen the latest count, but like 75 guys have got drafted the last 2 years. I mean, so it's not, the thing is, and I was talking to Coward about this yesterday, if you're a scout, you've seen him, the best athletes on defense play in the SEC, right? Top to bottom. Well, he hasn't just annihilated them for 3 years. Think of who he went against in practice for the first couple of years. Can you, if I was a scout and I had any reservations, I'd be like, hey, Kirby, can we just pull up the last couple of years of just some drill work with him? Like one-on-ones, 7-on-7, whatever. I mean, every guy isn't just starting or playing in the NFL. These guys were all like top 50 picks. So he's just an elite player in a league that position now, all the good teams have this. I mean, look at the Final Four, right? I know Mark Andrews was banged up, but Travis Kelce, George Kittle, Laporta, you know, this is just that position. I mean, Belichick's been on it since like the 80s. When you get a guy who, you know, can be a hybrid on the line of scrimmage, even in the slot, like who's covering that guy? I mean, who is? When you get that, and I saw his measurables, someone put him right up against Sam Laporta, who, you know, I think it's fair to say has a chance to be like one of the next stars in the NFL if you just were going to project based on his rookie season. So to do that in that program, it's one thing to become a star at Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State, but when you immediately are like, yeah, this guy is on a different level. Like there was no waiting process. It was immediate. Right. And that's what we've seen with just high end impact players like, you know, Myles Garrett or the Bosa brothers or Zeke. Like you just kind of know right away. You're like, now, as you get older, injury, I'm just saying right now, his ability, like I think he's an immediate impact player. Now, the value, I was talking with Daniel Jeremiah, because listen, if the quarterbacks go 1-4, the Chargers could get stuck. It takes two to tango. Right. You got what if no one's willing to trade? So when you're there, what would you do? And I was texting with a scouting buddy. I was like, shouldn't they just take, you know, could Alt play right tackle and just figure it out? He's like, well, there's so many tackles in this draft. You could get a right tackle later. You might as well go get a touchdown maker and we say the wide receivers, but like, shouldn't this guy be in the mix? Now, the difference is financially, when you draft a guy 5 overall, he's immediately making $8, $9 million. And the franchise tag for a tight end is 12. So you're like, well, you're already paying him kind of premium money. I'm like, well, I think this guy's a premium player. So you're not getting this guy in the second or third round. Now, if you want to take Marvin Harrison or Neighbors or whatever, I totally understand. But you're telling me if you get this guy with Harbaugh and Herbert, it wouldn't work immediately. Like, I have a hard time seeing. If you told me this guy, the Chargers took him at 5 overall, and you tell me he plays 17 games, I'd be like, he catches 94 balls next year.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's so many different ways you can go in the draft and where the Chargers have their board set up. But am I going to fault them if they take him 5th overall? And we're talking about if you're looking at him and being an offensive weapon and being the guy. Like, because the other thing about this, from the word go,
ideally you'd want to take it like 13 or 12. I get it.
If all things are on the table and everything's what and what, yes, I don't disagree at all. But if you're stuck and you make the pick and he's the top guy on your board and you're saying, this is a guy that came into Georgia and was the number one target in that passing attack from the word go, can he do that? And we believe he could do that in Los Angeles. Yeah, absolutely. I have no qualms about that at all. And Thor, I'm going to transition this to you. We already talked about the pain of watching Iowa football. And I know the pain of, it was not great to lose this guy last year to another injury and stuff. And we can get into the weeds about injuries for days. But one of the bright spots about watching Iowa football was...
Well, Eric, all only for the first month and a half of the season until he tore his ACL. And Debra, obviously, we're doing the tight end episode next week where we're going to deep dive the scouting reports on all these guys. Yep. So I know we're going to keep our comments a little bit shorter on these guys, but, you know, in advance of that episode. But just a bird's eye view of Eric Hall, 6'4 and a half, 252 pounds, started his career at one tight end factory, Jim Harbaugh's at Michigan, then ends up transferring to Iowa, the other tight end factory there in the Big Ten. He is a medical question guy where if he overcomes those medical things in the NFL, he is going to be a steal. The kid is a super duper skilled receiver, which again, we'll talk about more on next week's episode, who is also a very, very good athlete. He has proven in college that he can have multiple utilities at Michigan. He was their H-back move tight end type guy. At Iowa, he was used as the inline type guy. He did have that back injury season ending at Michigan that ended his career there. Had a bit of a disagreement with the Michigan staff about how to go about that. There was also some mystery about exactly what happened during the back surgery, exactly what, you know, the NFL teams with their medicals, they will figure that out. And then, of course, he had the torn ACL from this past season, which is why he couldn't test. But we'll get deeper into his game on next week's episode. But I just think that this kid, as long as he stays healthy in the NFL, which, of course, is the big question, the NFL medical staffs will have to decide for that on their own. But if he can stay healthy in the NFL, this guy's going to be a steal at the price point that he's at, and he's not getting discussed enough.
No, I was fighting you for him for this episode. You and I were like, look, I want all. No, you want all. No. Who's going to get all? And I don't disagree with you. I think that he's going to be slept on. I think that he is going to go and be a steal, assuming he gets back to full health. The kid's skills are all there. And I want to bring up a guy that might not get all the puff and praise, and he's not going to get all the glorious alliterations about what he can do at the NFL level. But I love his game, man. Ben Sinnott. I think that he's a fantastic two-way tight end. You look at the receiving utility last year, top 10 in both PFF receiving grade and yards per route run. He's a really freaking good blocker. You can use him in a multitude of ways, not only inline, but some H-back stuff. You could use him as a lead blocker. I think that looking at his talent profile, as well as he tested so freaking good, man. Like, we're talking 98th percentile burst score, 75th percentile speed scores. Like, the kid can play. So I'm very curious where he goes in the NFL draft, but he's definitely one of my guys. And I mean, look, we've talked about a ton of fantastic prospects in this entire episode. Speaking of my guys, John, thank you so much for stopping by, man. You're doing awesome work over at The Volume. Where can people check out all your stuff, man? It's been a treat to have you on the show.
Thanks, guys. I really enjoyed it. You guys are crushing on Fantasy Pros, man. You guys are booming business, let me tell you. Three and Out podcast. We all content daily, just podcast nonstop. We're on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Everything gets posted to YouTube, so it's really easy to follow. If you social media, we always post everything. It's just my name at John Middlecoff, The Volume posts everything. So all my stuff's pretty easy to find.
Absolutely, man. You need to be checking out John Middlecoff's work, and you need to be subscribing to this podcast and tuning into next week's episode. Again, Thor talked about this. We're going to run through the entirety of the tight end class, get deep into the weeds about all these guys, their skill sets, where they go, what we love, what we want to see them improve, man. But get subscribed, tune into next week's episode. For Thor, I, and Mr. John Middlecoff, we're out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.